Thank you, Holly, for that. This is the Colleen and Bradley Show on MyTalk 107.1, streaming live at MyTalk1071.com. Everything entertainment. I'm Colleen Lindstrom. That's Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
Hey. And you know, I am still trying to catch up so that I can get to season four of The Crown.
That's hard.
But people who have already caught up are loving this season. But both of you have and are watching.
It's true. The Crown season four finally came out. It's like one of the gifts of 2020, one of the actual bright spots this year in terms of entertainment. So much has been taken from us in terms of television and movies that we expected to see this year, but The Crown wasn't. And it makes me wonder, they must have been filming right up until the very end of when that sort of initial shutdown happened in March of this year, because I just kept thinking, like, we're in November and all this stuff I'm watching, it can't have been filmed over a year ago. But anyway, let me not get distracted by that other than to say this season of The Crown, I don't want to say one is better than the other, because each one in their own right unleashes something new to the story that we first met in season one. And they're all delightfully, I don't want to say self-contained, but almost, right? Because we know, and even if you're not watching The Crown, Colleen, you know that different actors have been playing the characters throughout their life as they advance, because we go forward in time. So Queen Elizabeth, who starts out actually as a princess and a child, has now become a I guess she's gone beyond middle age at this point and is sort of teetering on the verge of middle age and senior citizenhood, right, Holly?
Well, like, this is like in her 50s, I would say. So she's very settled into middle age.
Yeah, so we're in the 70s, heading into the 80s throughout this season. We also meet some new characters, but my point being that each season is kind of a self-contained story bubble, even though there is a thin thread connecting. It's not even that thin, but the thread sort of connects all of them. Each of the generations has sort of advanced. And other than just sort of the... Oh, go ahead.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I am going to actually watch, and I know you think I'm not, but I will. But if I were to just start with season four, would I be able to do that? Or is it important to watch all the seasons leading up to season four?
I will say, and Holly, feel free to add to this, I don't think you need to, but I think you will only enjoy it that much more if you do. Mm-hmm. You're not missing anything. Like, there's no need for you to hurry up and watch it just to feel like you have joined the party, because the entire season is dropped at once. Everybody's on a different episode.
Right.
Or they've finished it. Like in Holly's case, she actually finished the season. I'm about seven episodes in. I don't think you're going to lose anything if you were to start on season four, or I should say, you won't lose anything that will prevent you from understanding the story, but you will lose something in terms of, I think, an emotional connection to the characters. What do you think, Holly?
Yeah, I agree with you, Bradley, because I actually didn't finish season three of The Crown. I watched about half of it, and then I was like, well, do I go back and watch the second half of season three? And then I was just like, no, I don't have time for this. I'm just diving right into season four. So, and that's totally fine.
And do you want to tell people, Holly, sort of where we find the queen and her brood at the beginning of season four?
Oh, sure. Thoroughly in middle age, like you said, Bradley. Prince Charles is looking for love in all the wrong places. They're basically telling Prince Charles, look, honey, you got to settle down. It's part of the crown. What are you going to do about it? And so what does he do about it? He finds Princess Diana, marries Princess Diana. They both know that they shouldn't be marrying each other, but they do it anyways out of a sense of duty. So we also find ourselves thoroughly in the Thatcher years, being Margaret Thatcher, the first female prime minister of the UK. So there's all of that going on at the same time.
Can I just say that is one of the things from season one that I appreciated a lot, was how you see how the royal family works with the prime minister in a way that I never paid a whole lot of attention to their structure. But you do see how they work kind of in tandem and the relationship that they have as well, which is just interesting.
Right.
And you see how it changes. Prime ministers, governments change regularly, but the family, as it were, because that's what we're talking about, is essentially, I mean, it. Don't take this in the negative, pejorative sense of the meaning, but it's like a mob. Like, mm-hmm. you have this family that persists over time, and right. it is a family power relationship, a family-based institution, and they persist despite whatever governments rise and fall. And there is a very interesting, and again, that's one argument to watch these season by season, because you do, by, you know, you do begin to arrive at a place by the fourth season where you've appreciated what the monarchs are dealing with mm-hmm. based on their history of the last three seasons.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And then you can see what's really fascinating about season four of The Crown is that there's that institution of the British monarchy coming to a head with modernity, and then seeing how individuals who are caught up within this system suffer quite a bit and have to subjugate their own personal wants, desires, needs to this institution that's literally flaking. The wallpaper is flaking. The mouse is scurrying in the house. Mm-hmm. And so it goes and explores how these relationships between this family are made tense by having to be the Queen of England, mm-hmm. being Prince Charles, all and Princess Margaret too. You know, there's a whole episode about her and where she finds herself thoroughly Queen in sister. Middle age. Yeah,
you know, it's interesting that you pointed out the mouse, because did you? I don't know that everybody probably caught that, but there's an episode wherein a mouse like runs across the floor, but like literally out of the corner of your eye, you would see it, and it's just such a huge. There are two things I just wanted to point out, and one of them is kind of illustrated by that the filmmakers, the people writing this show, did such a wonderful job. Anything that can make you feel empathy towards something that is so unrelatable, like the British monarchy, that is a triumph, right? Like, they could use the institution of the monarchy to tell human stories that are relatable to people who have no proximity to those things whatsoever. I mean, not only do we not have a proximity to it because of our class, but because of our nationality and culture, right? Mm-hmm. But that you could find yourself, as I did last night in the seventh episode, wanting to get a hug from the Queen. Sounds so stupid.
I felt but sorry, like, for Margaret Thatcher in one episode.
Which is no small thing for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I had human feelings for Margaret Thatcher, and I was like, oh, poor honey.
A highly controversial, terribly, terribly consequential person in time and history, but that you could appreciate humanity through the characters that were portrayed on screen, and to do so with a great attention to detail. That's the other thing, is that quite many people close to the story have indicated that they have done a lot of research to understand what's actually going on.
Well, I mean, you guys have built the case for me to finally catch up. But that's what we're talking about when we come back on the Colleen and Bradley Show. What are you going to binge this weekend? We've got a holiday coming up. We're stuck at home. What are you going to binge this weekend? 651-641-1071. We'll take your calls after this on My Talk 107.1.